Father's Day, I thought I would just start by talking about a little bit being a dad. I don't usually do like Father's Day sermons. That's not what this is. This isn't a Father's Day teaching. But at the beginning, I thought it'd just be kind of helpful to talk about these three kids I raised. So I raised three kids. And Wendy was there too. I want to add that. She was a part of that. But she would agree, I'm pretty sure, on this day that I did most of it. I did most of the heavy lifting. But these three kids that we raised, I always found that her and I, as we would talk about raising children, I was always thinking through raising my emotional intelligence, because I thought I kind of knew what I was doing, but each of these kids came along, and I had three daughters, and all three of these daughters kind of forced me to always be thinking through what is happening to them individually, how they're interacting, and then as they went out into the world, how the world was affecting them, and they'd come back and interact. And what really made things difficult, if you have children, or if you, you know, kind of maybe have had a couple children, you'll understand this. What made things difficult was you'd figure out the first kid, and you'd be like, oh, I got it. That's kind of their personality. That's why they do what they do. It all makes sense. So the second kid comes along, you're like, this is going to be easy. And then that second kid is completely different, like 100% different. You're like, oh, we have to kind of redo this, raise that emotional intelligence again. Then the third kid for us came along, and that kid was completely different. And how do you kind of discipline these kids? That's what we kept kind of trying to figure out. How do you help kids figure out how to live? Because discipline, which is a word I actually love, I love the word discipline. I don't love words like punishment or shame or things like that, but discipline, for me, awesome word. Because all discipline means, especially in the Bible, is helping someone be a disciple. All that simply means is helping someone follow the way they're supposed to go. So disciplining our children wasn't just like here and there when they did something wrong, it was kind of constant. For instance, my two youngest daughters had to be handled completely different when it came to disciplining them. My middle daughter, Vienne, some of you know her, you could not speak softly to her. You did not want to speak gently to her. You wanted to speak very strongly to her. She was an extremely strong-willed little girl. She knew what she wanted. She thought she knew better than you. And this was when she was like two. Yeah. So when I would talk to her, I'd be like, Vienne, we're going to stop doing this right now. And I'd kind of make her just kind of stand there. And she'd want to look away like my cat does when I'm trying to talk to my cat. She'd look away. I'd be like, eye to eye. We're making eye to eye contact. Vienne, this is what we're doing. I need you to stop doing this, and we're going to do this. And I would speak very strongly to her. And she would look at me and she'd be like, okay. And then she'd do it. If I tried that with my youngest daughter, if I had stood her in front of me and said, look at me, and then I went, we are going to do this, honey. This is exactly what we were going to do. She'd have like wilted, tears just flowing. She'd have melted into the corner or something, because she could not take the same discipline in the same way that my middle daughter could take discipline. So you have to kind of handle people differently. I kind of think about this with God. I think God handles us differently. I think the way God tries to get you and I to follow isn't always exactly the same for each of us. It's as if God sees me and goes, oh, this is what Michael needs. Yep. And so I'm going to deal with him in this way. And then he sees you and he goes, oof, I'm not going to deal exactly with that person the same way I would with Michael. That wouldn't actually even make any sense. I'm going to kind of do some things to help them follow, to correct them and guide them, and it's going to look a little bit different. Because the goal is always the same. I gave a little bit of a definition. I'll give a little more specific one. Discipline: to guide and correct in order to bring spiritual maturity. To guide and correct in order to bring spiritual maturity. I always wanted to discipline, but as I said, I didn't really want to harshly punish and shame my children, but that can be a really fine line. Sometimes you really kind of need to be the authority and tell them what to do. And sometimes you want to be careful, because if you go too far over that line, you cause a whole lot of problems for them, and they kind of start to resent you. And that can become even a lifelong thing for certain children. So I just kept in mind this principle. It's a principle I think God keeps in mind for you and me. It was a really simple principle. Discipline means that I am going to mold my child's will, but never break their will. And so I've always thought of it with my kids. It was like, okay, constantly molding them. And when I say constantly, I mean intentionally, daily, sometimes by the hour, I was thinking about what would be the best thing to help my kids mature and grow. I think God does the same thing. I think God is not desirous to break your will. Sometimes people think this, like, oh, I'm broken, so now I'm ready to go to God. I think God is desirous to do whatever it takes to mold your will. Sometimes that means that we do get broken. And when I've seen people who've gotten broken, almost always it's the consequences of things they've done, how they've lived. And when we get broken, when we really break, I think that's where God becomes more and more intentional with us, correcting us. As I would raise my kids, I would also tell them quite often, I'd say, I'm not raising kids. I said this. This is because I'm like one of my little phrases. I'm not raising kids, I'm raising adults. And they'd roll their eyes because they knew what that meant. I'd say, I know you're like 7 years old, but I'm doing this because I want you to be a ridiculously mature 25-year-old. That's my whole goal in life, is that you'll be an amazing 25-year-old. The thing I didn't tell them is, I do not want to be supporting you at 25. So they're thinking it's all about them. No, no, no. Very selfish, but that's all right. I want to raise you. I'm thinking about everything so that when you're an adult, you grow and mature and you understand some things. And so there was a lot of correction. My kids still joke that whenever they saw the legal pad come out, that they knew some correction was happening. This is like always funny to them. This is no joke either at all. Whenever I thought something needed corrected, we would come to the kitchen table. This is like 100% true. Come to the kitchen table, I'd pull out a yellow pad, a yellow legal pad and a pen, and I would start drawing things and writing things and saying, so the reason you guys are gossiping, and I would explain what each of them is doing and what's happening, and what that does is that hurts this person and makes them feel left out, and they'd sit there and they just look at it and look at it. And we would do this all the time. And I would explain to them some biblical principles and relational principles and family principles, and they would groan. And then I would write some more graphs and pictures, and they would groan because I loved every minute of it. They did not. Here's the funny thing, though. They remember these. Some of these they can draw out themselves, and this is true. They have kept some of those yellow sheets still today into adulthood. They still have some of those yellow sheets because the principles and the ideas were really good for them. Constant correction, constant guidance. So now listen to the shepherd and psalmist David. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. I just want to pause there for a second. I said this last week. There is a massive shift that happens with David right here in this passage. He's writing this psalm and he's basically telling other sheep, man, my shepherd's awesome. But then this shift happens in verse 4 where he starts talking to the shepherd himself. He looks up at the shepherd and he goes, I have some things I want to say to you. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, he says to the shepherd. And then he says this, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Again, he's talking right to the Lord, right to God. David, like any other shepherd, has tools he uses. He uses a rod and a staff. These he uses in this passage as metaphors for how God helps us, how God disciplines the sheep. A rod is this small, sturdy stick. Its use was to show authority and correction of straying sheep. In fact, sometimes shepherds, I think, are portrayed a bit too soft. You know, they kind of have these long, flowing garments. They have this beautiful staff. Sometimes you just see them in fields with these sheep as everybody's just, you know, kind of happy and restored. Everything's good. That's not really a shepherd. A shepherd was quite rugged, tough, gritty, strong. A shepherd had to withstand the elements, had to go against wild beasts, and anything that would come against their flock. A shepherd was anything but weak. They had authority over the sheep, and they wanted to prove to the sheep and show the sheep they had authority in general. So they portrayed grit and power when it was needed. And the shepherd was so tough that it had the rod to keep back anything that would come and hurt the sheep on their home turf or when they were traveling. And sometimes it was even needed to bring the sheep back. Now, I understand that as a father raising these three daughters, I constantly saw myself as having a role as an authority figure, to some degree holding back hurt that could endanger my own little flock. It was constant, watching, caring, much like the shepherd, much like John says in John 10, the good shepherd, God. But also I needed my kids to know that their mom and I were the authority in their life. We were over them. It wasn't just that we took care of them. They needed to respect us. We were in charge of them. It's this interesting relationship you have with children. It's an interesting relationship God has with us. He loves us. He adores you. He also is wanting to be the authority over you. Not just to protect you only, but for you to know who's in charge. This stuff actually really matters in how we live. Shepherds would use the rod to kind of bring back wayward sheep to the fold, reminding them, I'm in charge. But then they had this other thing, this staff, this longer stick with a curved end. And this was used to constantly guide and lead the sheep, basically keeping them on the right path. That little staff would go around the neck. You'd think it would hurt the sheep. Not really. It was just kind of to yank them over, get back where you're supposed to be. So the rod was used as a tool of discipline to protect and bring back, you know, a wayward sheep, even a rebellious sheep. But the staff was kind of constantly used, guiding the sheep. This is where we're going. It was also tall enough that they could always see it, almost like a compass. This is where we're going. This is what good parents do. They're kind of constantly supposed to be putting a vision out for what their kids are going to be like. This is where we're going. This is what I see in you. This is what's impressive about you. These are the things that you need to work on all the time because these are going to get you in trouble when you get older. So let's deal with those. Constantly visioning. This is what God's doing. He's constantly visioning for us. This is what's great about you. This is what's impressive about you. I'm so proud and impressed with you. And here's some things that get you in trouble all the time. You need to kind of smooth out those rough edges. These things were used in tandem to discipline, protecting the sheep from harm, guiding them to what is right, correcting them when they wandered or they made some mistakes. And so David uses this metaphor. He wants us to hear this metaphor. As he is talking to the Lord, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Here's that biblical definition of discipline again. I added a little piece to it. Discipline is to guide and correct in order to bring spiritual maturity so that they will have self-discipline and self-control. My daughter, my oldest daughter, turns 26 in 2 days. We've often had Father's Day and her birthday on the same day. It's kind of been fun. I do not want to discipline her anymore. I want to be there for advice and guidance and wisdom. That's great. But I do not want to come down on her. When she was 6, yes. 26, no. Instead, what I want her to do is figure some of these things out as we have taught her. As her mom and I have constantly tried to kind of guide her, show her the compass for her life, that she figures it out. In the same way, God would like you to grow and to mature, to still go to God for wisdom and guidance, but that you don't have to constantly be dealt with over the same thing day after day or month after month or year after year or even decade after decade. It's not as if God won't keep pursuing you and keep loving you and keep bringing the staff and the rod and all that. But at some point, it's like, come on. Figure it out a little bit. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Now, I got to mention, I think this word comfort's a little odd. So we've got the rod and the staff, and basically this is a shepherd constantly disciplining the children, bringing the sheep, bringing them back where they're supposed to be. And then the way that David describes this is the constant correction and guidance is a comfort. Comfort, I think, is a weird word. The Hebrew here is nakam. It actually means that I feel calmer and life is easier because I am being disciplined. It is why I firmly believe that when we let our life be disciplined, we actually find an ease of life. If you give children no boundaries as kids, no rules to live by, no nothing, you would think they'd be happy, all the freedom they have. They're not. In fact, they feel less loved. They feel more anxious. As you give kids boundaries and you're constantly on them and showing them what to do and how to grow and mature, it's amazing how much kids go, yeah, I really felt loved. They really cared where I was at. They really cared what was going on with me. Whether I was 2 or 15, they cared. Your rod and your staff comfort me. They let me know how I'm supposed to live. We start to make good decisions. We start to handle difficulty well. If I could say this more simply, for me, discipline equals freedom. The more disciplined I am, the more free I am. And at first, this sounds backwards. Most people think freedom means doing whatever you want, not following the rules. Freedom means I can just, you know, have total independence. Nobody's telling me what to do. I don't want an authority. But true freedom in life, whether it's spiritual or health or finances or relationships or time, it actually comes through self-discipline and self-control. Discipline doesn't restrict you. The discipline of God creates space for greater choices, more strength when difficult things happen. And what I have found is the more discipline you let God do in your life, the more open you have time and energy to serve other people. But when it's just about you and you're not letting God discipline you, it is very hard to open yourself to other people. Without discipline, life becomes pretty chaotic. We're ruled by impulses and the latest crisis or somebody else's demands. Without the rod and the staff, the sheep would go down paths where they would get in danger, cause problems. They'd end up lonely and fearful, all alone. And we're not much different. Here's how Paul describes it in Galatians 5. It is absolutely clear that God has called you to a free life. You're supposed to live free. And so my counsel is this: live freely, animated. I love that phrase. Basically means have creativity coming out of you. Very hard to be creative when all you're living is by the late next impulse or the next chaotic moment. And be motivated by God's Spirit. I want this. But how do you get that? Well, first and foremost, we got to get out of our own way. This is how Paul then does things. He likes to kind of take these ideas of live a more disciplined life so you can be more free, and then he gets really practical. And so before he explains the ways to make your life better, he explains the ways an undisciplined life really makes your life miserable. So this is what he says. This is from The Message. It is obvious what kind of life develops out of trying to get your own way all the time. Repetitive, loveless, cheap sex. A stinking accumulation of mental and emotional garbage. Frenzied and joyless grabs for happiness. Trinket gods. Magic show religion. Paranoid loneliness. Cutthroat competition, all-consuming yet never satisfied wants, a brutal temper, an impotence to love or to be loved, divided homes and divided lives, small-minded and lopsided pursuits, the vicious habit of depersonalizing everyone into some sort of rival, uncontrolled and uncontrollable addictions, ugly parodies of community. I could go on, Paul says. That's freedom, really, freedom. Do whatever you want. Freedom. This life guided by my own desires and impulses rather than God's discipline is what Paul puts out there for us. Does it sound like freedom, Paul is asking. He's like, I'm imploring you, live the free life, live freely, animated, be motivated by God's Spirit. Look at that list again. I'll just make it into a little list. And maybe ask yourself, do I struggle with any of these? Maybe one or two, maybe half, I don't know. You know. Read through the list. Repetitive, loveless, cheap sex, a stinking accumulation of mental and emotional garbage, frenzied and joyless grabs for happiness, trinket gods and magic show religion, paranoid loneliness, cutthroat competition, all-consuming yet never satisfied wants, a brutal temper, an impotence to love or to be loved, a divided home and divided lives, small-minded and lopsided pursuits, the vicious habit of depersonalizing other people into a rival, uncontrolled and uncontrollable addictions, ugly parodies of community. And as he says at the end, I could go on. What Paul puts this out for, the reason he puts all of this language out there is to basically say to you, this is all available to you. You can live in this way, whether it's a little bit or a lot, it's fine. It is not freedom. It will imprison you. You're going to have a really hard time growing and maturing. I'm going to constantly be having to deal with you. And whether you're 6 or 26 or 46 or 66, you're going to keep dealing with these things. But what happens if you let God discipline you through the Holy Spirit? I mean, this is kind of the rhetorical question Paul is asking. What happens if you own up to this stuff and let God deal with you? Here's what Paul says happens. What happens when we live in God's way? He brings gifts into our lives. I love that he calls these gifts. Much the same way that fruit appears in an orchard, you get things like affection for others. You're exuberant about life. Serenity. We develop a willingness to stick with things, a sense of compassion in our heart, a conviction that a basic holiness, sacred, as we said earlier, permeates things and people, that everyone we meet is made in God's image. Nobody's a rival. That's not how life works. If you've made people a rival, that's you. That's not God. We find ourselves involved in loyal commitments we hold to our word. Not needing to force our way in life, we're able to marshal, to direct our energies wisely. This is a life filled with freedom. These gifts come in as you let the Holy Spirit lead you. And as these gifts come in, you start to change into this person. Look at this list again. Are these things prevalent in your life? Is this the list that people would use to sum up how you live? Affection, exuberance, joy, serenity, peace. Do you live a peaceful life? Do you stick with things, perseverance and patience? Do you have compassion in the heart, kindness? that conviction that a basic holiness permeates things and people. That's goodness. That means not only do you see yourself as good, every single person you encounter has God's image in them. There's nobody that you see, nobody that you think about that doesn't have God's image in them as much as you do. It makes it really hard to judge. Loyal commitments. I'm faithful to the commitments I've made in life, to people and to things. I don't need to force my way in life. Gentleness. I'm able to marshal and direct my energies wisely. That's self-control. This is what God's Spirit is constantly trying to do. His rod and his staff correcting and guiding and prodding us. And so I close with this. God is disciplining you right now with the rod and the staff. This never stops. Now, he's doing it different to you than I think he does it to me. Because I think each of us are his children and we have different personalities and things that have happened in our lives. And so he's guiding us. He's guiding you right now. He never will stop. Now, you can ignore it. You may even rebel against it. You don't like someone in charge of you. You don't want to give authority to someone else. And what's fascinating is God seems to give us, his children, much like the prodigal son, the choice to do our own thing. He just does. But God never stops wanting to help guide you. God never stops wanting to raise you into a fully mature adult. As Aaron comes forward to continue to lead us, and we take the Eucharist together, I do want to go back to that little phrase that Paul says in Galatians 5 to kind of start this. It is absolutely clear that God has called you to a free life. I'm going to ask you, just take a moment, close your eyes with me. And ask yourself these questions from his counsel, his wisdom to you. Are you living freely? Is there anything imprisoning you, holding you down? Choices you're making, attitudes you have, behaviors and thoughts. His second piece of counsel, just ask these questions, you and God. Am I living animated? Meaning, do I have joy? Do I look forward to the next day to live alongside God and others? Am I hopeful? And as you stay in a place of prayer, I say to you, if you're not living like this, I put no condemnation or shame on you. And nor do I think God is trying to condemn you or put shame on you. I think he is prodding. He's got the rod and the staff out, trying to guide you, trying to correct you. So talk to God. Open yourself to his correction and guidance. Because if you do, I believe you will find a growth and maturity that is exponential. And when you're ready, I encourage you to go and respond to God at the table. There you'll find bread in honor of Christ's body that was broken. And you'll find wine or juice in honor of Christ's blood spilled for you. If you're a guest with us, brand new to the journey, the communion table, you can watch everyone else, but it is open to you as well if that is a place where you'd like to come and maybe do some business with God. The journey at its core is a place of acceptance and it's a place of grace. And there is grace for all of you. Lord, I just ask you to continue to discipline our lives. I want to ask that everybody in this space, God, is open to love and joy, peace and patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And so, God, I ask in your Spirit to guide each of us and open ourselves to desiring to grow and mature in our faith. For you are with us, Lord, and we want to be with you. We love you. It's in your name we pray. Amen. Tables are open.